Okay, hello everyone, and thank you for joining the Adapted Standards Task Force meeting. I'm Seth Pazinski with ONC, and I want to thank all of our task force members for continuing to volunteer their time to support this task force and lend their expertise. And I want to thank any of the members from the public who've joined our task force meeting today as well. As a reminder, your feedback is welcomed. And it can be typed in the chat feature throughout the meeting, or it can be made verbally during the public comment period that is scheduled for approximately 11:50 this morning. Let's begin the roll call of the task force members. When I call your name, please indicate your presence. Start with the co-chairs, Hans Buitendijk.
Good morning.
Morning. Steve Eichner.
Good morning.
Jeff Stanford. Raj Gutvardi. Jim Jurgis. John Kilborn.
Morning.
Morning. Hung Liu.
Good morning.
Clem McDonald. Devin McGraw. Leo Olivari. Vasil Vasipajev.
Here.
Samantha Pitts.
Here.
Alexis Snyder.
Good morning.
Good morning. Phil Sutherland.
Good morning.
Ram Sharam. Raymond Yu.
Good morning.
Sorry, this is Ram Sriram. Good morning. I was under mute.
Oh, good morning.
Great.
And Debbie Willis.
Good morning.
All right. Thank you, everyone. And I will turn it over to Hans and Steve for their opening remarks.
Steve, do you want to kick it off?
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for our second major working meeting for the task force. We're excited to go through a number of the additional standards and continue our work. I think we can have some good discussions today. So again, welcome. Hans?
Welcome, everybody, indeed. We are going to look at progressing the work. You'll see a couple of things that are happening. One is that we're progressing with group number two, where we left off last week. We're going to go back to one of the early ones that we have some further review to do on. But then, assuming that we can make it through group two, you'll see that we are jumping to group five. And the reason for that is that based on some input that we are looking, additional input and insights from others, groups three and four, public health quality measures, are being scheduled shortly so that we can have the opportunity to get that insight. So that's why you see a group two and then jump to five. That's happening. Hopefully we had all the chance to go through the materials a little bit more. And the other thing that you will notice is that in the spreadsheet, there are some follow-ups still left to be done. But for the code systems, there is, as of this morning, a draft, and it's marked as draft recommendation that might sum up the discussion that we have. So we won't review that today, but if you have any comments or suggestions around that in the spreadsheet, you can use the column before, right in front of it, to make any suggestions or otherwise on how to improve upon that or clarify that, etc. So, but that's, we're not going to land on that today. And then looks like that for public comment, we already have at least one person lined up once we get there who might have something. We'll see. And Seth will help us through that today. And we should not, that's for Steve and myself, not forget to actually move on to that. Seth will keep us honest there. So we'll see what's happening there.
Before we get into the meat of our meeting today, I think there are a couple of minor housekeeping things you'd like to take care of. Dr. Raymond's able to join us, and we're sorry that he's feeling a little bit ill, but we welcome him and like to give Dr. Raymond an opportunity to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Stephen. My name is Raymond Uy. I'm a physician informaticist with the National Association of Community Health Centers. I've been out this past 2-3 weeks from multiple fractures on the left upper extremity and COVID, finally, after 2.5 years. My background is in clinical medicine, and I did a postdoc fellowship in bioinformatics with Dr. Clem McDonald from the National Library of Medicine. And in the interim, I teach clinical informatics in the Philippines, as well as doing some consulting in the industry. Right now, I do clinical terminology across multiple projects with the CDC and HRSA. Thanks for having me in the HITECH, and nice to meet everyone.
Thank you so much for joining us, and glad you're feeling better. And Seth, can you give us a quick reminder about making comments in the chat and what can be seen by the public and what cannot?
Yes, if you want to make a comment that can be seen by everyone, you just select everyone.
Yeah.
And if you want to just send a message just to the panelists, you can just indicate host and panelists.
And is it correct that comments to everybody will be included in the records, but comments to individuals are not included in the meeting materials of the archive?
That is correct. Yeah, if you want to have your comments included in the public archive, just send those to everyone, and then we'll record those. And again, you have the opportunity to submit your comments there or at the end verbally during the public comment period.
Thank you so much. And Hans, I'll throw the floor back to you.
All right, thank you. All right, why don't we then go to the spreadsheet as we continue work. And what you will see when we arrive there is that they're currently filtered on group 2 and 5. That's where we're going to concentrate. But wanted to just, if we can open it up to group 1 as well, that we can point to where the update is. For your reference after a separate from this meeting. Let's see, I don't think it's, there we go. I think it's about to be there. Yes, now let's adjust the screen size here. Okay-do. So if you can open up the filter for just a moment to include, yeah, there you go. You see on the right-hand side, and we'll start to do that as we go through and we have more information. Begin to define what would a recommendation look like based on the discussion and the conversation that we have. If you have any comments, put them in column X next to it for additional suggestions. And you also see that then the references are, as we discussed, C number 1. It is pointing to column A, and that was inserted just to avoid if for some reason there's resorting or otherwise, that we can keep a correct link there. So keep that in mind, and then we'll start to do the same thing for others as well. And look out for those. So group 2, if we go to the first one in that group, we started that conversation. We actually discussed the first 3 that you can see on the screen. On the first one, we specifically wanted to come back to that as Debbie had a couple of thoughts, questions around CCD. And we want to make sure that we captured that as well before we started to move on to other topics. So we wanted to ask Debbie, can you clarify or provide the questions or the feedback that you were looking at?
Sure. And thank you for this opportunity. We have a consumer-facing application that allows patients to pull in their data via FHIR. And we have been pulling in CCDs with STU2, which are very, very handy for patients. And we noticed that when we started pulling data in from the R4 endpoints, the first health organization, the first EHR that we started pulling it in, we weren't getting any CCDs. And so I we reached out to them and we were told that CCDs were no longer required to be shared with patients. And I don't know if that was an oversight or a misunderstanding of the standards, but the explanation I got was that everything was already being shared via FHIR, all the particular elements. But the reality is if a patient wants to share what happened at a particular encounter, maybe they went to an emergency room yesterday or they want to share their entire history, it's a lot easier to share it in a single document rather than search through their different parts of their record to find out what happened at the latest encounter. And so I just wanted to bring that up to the committee to find out, has that requirement to share a CCD with patients really been taken away, or was that a misunderstanding or just an oversight? What's going on with that?
I guess there are probably two parts, and we'll look at ONC as well, but two parts to that is that the certification still requires support for CCD. So certified software should have that. Now the question is that are they all exposed through FHIR APIs? That's probably may need some clarification, what kind of clinical notes are in there. But that is a little bit more outside the scope of this group to interpret whether a particular implementation is or is not supporting a particular capability according to a standard or a certification, whether that's accurate. So that part of the question, I think we need to address separately than what we are focusing on in the task force, where the question is that is a standard that's being used still appropriate to be used? Whether the implementation of this or other standards is totally done accurately, I think we need to address it as a separate question outside of the task force, but still a valid question to make sure that everybody is aligned on what's supposed to be there. But that's not the charge of the task force.
Yeah, that's fair. And I wasn't quite sure. I didn't really know who to bring this up to. So I appreciate that. Just being able to have it identified and maybe understand who is it that needs to address that would be good.
Seth, is there somebody at ONC that would be that you would suggest to ask the question to? I know that a number of people on the call also would be outside of the meeting be helpful to help out. I'd be more than happy to see what the situation is, but the official answer needs to come from somewhere else.
Yeah, happy to take that one back and follow up.
Hope you know.
Thank you, Seth. Thank you, Hans.
You're welcome. Any other questions around the topic here? Because then the first three we already went through. And we wanted to pick it up at row 18, number 16 there. But as this is the second meeting that we're going through, also want to give the opportunity, if there's something else that somebody thought about on 13, 14, 15, let's catch that and then we jump into the rest. And then Steve, anything before we're going to jump into 16, 17 that you want to share and then jump in or ready to go?
I've got nothing.
All right. So first one here is around the notation for national and international telephone numbers that's currently in place. When we look at the feedback that we see, many maintains, there's an abstain, there's still some work going on, inconclusive, need more information. So I think why don't we start, is Alexis on the line, or if anybody else has additional questions or backdrop that that's needed on that standard. And effectively, it has the characteristics in some ways of a code system. On the other hand, it's about format, so it's slightly in between. The standard has not changed since it was published. There is no known new version out there. And at least that was for me a reason to indicate maintain. There's nothing new that we know about. There's nothing else that we know about. So perhaps this is a one that we just say, keep on using it. It's still helpful. It still provides standardization of that aspect. No need to make any changes there. Is that something we can conclude from the feedback, or is there additional information that we need to have? If not, then I'm going to put in, and if you can scroll to the right a little bit, it's showing. So now it should pop up. So I guess this one is going to be that we are going to phrase something along the lines of maintain.
This is Steve. I think in the note, I think we included the note that we could, there was no alternative identified.
Okay.
Just to provide a little extra clarification.
And we'll phrase something around that. Sounds good. And then we have a type of standard. Next one, number 17, International Public Telecommunication Numbering Plan. You see very much the same kind of feedback maintained. There is also no known new standard. Maybe if somebody is aware of that, please let everybody know. But there's, as far as we know, no other one, no new version, no alternative, and it has been working. So is there any other questions or concerns that would lead us to a other conclusion than maintain, same mark with that, no alternative identified?
And Hans, this is Steve again. I think the same would apply, but it also occurs to me in looking at the report we're going to develop, one of the things that we probably should include or might consider including is a little bit of our methodology in looking at how we collected information about potential alternatives, so that can be a resource when the next task force comes along in several years to do the same kind of thing, so that we can share kind of the process we went through, whether it's useful or not, let the next task force determine, but at least we've established a methodology and shared that as a process, including where we've looked.
That seems to make perfect sense. Does anybody have additional comments to that? Then we can start to work on outlining that as well, summarizing that as we are working on these other ones. And I see reactions in the chat, right?
So I think to help build that out a little bit, if task force members can kind of contribute where they may have looked for alternative standards, that would be great.
All right.
Although in this particular case, it's kind of silly to look for telecommunication numbering standards outside of the ITU, right? I mean, it's kind of self.
We'll be self-defeating in a way. Agreed. But if there is something else, it's fair game to consider. But agreed with your perspective there as well.
For these two particular items, it might not be a health-specific standard. There might be another IT, coming from a different domain or IT in general, a standard that would apply.
Yep. Unless there are other comments, then I think we're ready to go to the next one. Clearly more specific to healthcare. We have the direct project, number 18, the ONC applicability statement. That was in the rule version 1.2. Since that time, there is a version 1.3 that has been made available, as well as that it has been put into ASAP. So it is now permitted for an HIT that wants to be certified to that criteria that references it to use that more current standard. That's permitted. From that point forward, latest published, there is nothing more current. This is very recent, last year. There may be work in progress, not yet that I'm aware of. There might be some start. There are certainly discussions going on, but there's no known date of anything more current than that in flight. So if we then look at the reactions that that are in here, you see a number, a couple of phase out replace, because there's a more current version out there, a couple of inconclusives need more information, and some are working on it. So at this point in time, with that in mind, what additional information are we needing to help arrive at a conclusion? I heard somebody speak up. Nope. Okay. Any additional information that somebody was particularly looking for to help inform their recommendation?
I just can provide one piece of information, is that the version 1.3 is an actual ANSI standard compared to all the previous versions, which were consensus-based discussions without going through the ANSI process with all the requirements that are attached to it. So to me, that is a good indication that it makes sense to update to the latest version.
And do you think that it would be, since we don't know when the next regulation may be proposed, that this would be a statement along the lines of starting with use a more current version, since that's available, plus add the additional comment, plus it's now ANSI standard, which makes it a stronger standard. Something along those lines. Is that where you're heading?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, so I'll put that in as the note. Others, does that make sense to everybody?
Yes, it does. I think I marked this as working because I just wasn't sure sort of what the status of use of direct given migration to FHIR, but I also don't have sort of daily interaction with that standard. So I didn't want to, I don't have a strong view on this, but I didn't want to opine until I'd heard more of the discussion. So this was helpful.
Great, thank you. Anybody else? Then we know what direction we need to head with phrasing this. All right, then we go on to the next one. And any point in time, if we go too quickly, pull us back. 19, it's the... go ahead.
Sorry, Hans, this is Seth Zizio. And see, I just wanted to let folks know we did have an issue with the chat feature and the ability to send chats to everyone. We've got that corrected now. So apologies, but just wanted to make sure folks are aware. You can now choose the everyone option if you want to send the chat out publicly. Thank you.
Okay. I noticed that I need to check my box there too, correctly. Okay, next one, ONC implementation guides for direct edge protocols version 1.1. Is in the current certification or in the rules, there is no version listed in ASFAP as a more current one, and there is no later published version in this for this standard. When you look at the feedback, also a couple of questions on more information, a couple of working, we see a difference in that there's one that indicates maintain and one that indicates replace phase out. Vasil, not to put you on the spot, but which one are you looking at that could replace this? Or that would be a good reason to say, let's move on to something else, new version or other standard?
Well, as part of the update to the previous standard, there is an ongoing update to the to a specification that was not named, which is the XDR-XDN for direct implementation guide. However, part of the edge protocol specification will be moving into the XDR-XDN for direct implementation guide because that is the logical place where that can be properly defined and better formally defined. And the edge protocols is just about ready to be updated as well. So within the next few months, there'll be new version of the direct edge protocols, which will reference the almost complete XDR-XDN for direct IG update.
Okay.
And so if if we are going to suggest to have the latest version for line 18, we have to have line 19 up to the latest version. Otherwise, you have contradictory requirements, since there are a lot of misunderstandings, mistypes corrected from that 2014 version.
So is it fair or appropriate to say that then actually what is in the ASFAP, because that's only 1.3 and not the corresponding hex protocol, that that is already causing challenges, or it's just a continuation of the challenge that already existed? Not that it necessarily matters for our recommendation, because this would effectively say, do the same on this one, and we are aware that something new is coming out. So it's fair to then go to the newest version. But is that
I think the SVAP by itself does not contain issues. It's adding, it's having the line 19 requirement not reflect what is in SVAP is an issue.
Okay. As part of our statements, should we indicate then that it's coming up in the next couple of months? Is it a year or two out? Is it short term, long term? What's your assessment of that?
These will be ANSI standards as well. So they'll go through the whole process. So we're looking at half a year to a year.
Okay. And then there's a comment in the chat from Hung Lu. Hung Lu, do you want to clarify that or address that question?
I'm a little uncomfortable recommending a replacement with something that isn't totally ready yet. And so, you know, while we can make in the comment for the recommendation that we are aware of versions that are being worked on and alternatives that are being worked on, the fact that they are not ready for prime time, I don't think we should be retiring something before a fully vetted alternative is available.
So is a better phrasing, and we may need to go back to other ones that we say consider. So it's not a clear maintain as is. We don't know about anything else, but we know that there's a new one or there is about to be a new one. So you should consider it to move to the next one at that point in time. So it's not a
If the recommendation is update to the latest at the time of whatever our general copy, consider the then most currently published version, that will cover the case where the updated versions will be available and they'll be considered, right?
Point in time, that correct, and then at that point in time, if it's found that the then most current is not good enough, or there's something else alternative has come up in the meantime, that's still part of it. But what we are indicating is that there's a high probability that there's something else, and that's the reason why I can start to think about retiring what's there. But you cannot retire it until the next version of the regulation. It's not going to be taken up, and maybe that's the question to ask. But unless there's another regulation that changes what's in the current one, it's still there. So, Hong, does that address your question if we phrase it that way, or does that still raise a concern?
That's fine. I mean, I thought the alternative, what I was hearing is that we are wanting to consider the subsuming of the edge protocols by the applicable statement for secure health transport version. And my understanding was that was not yet complete. And yet we were talking about actually retiring the edge protocols before the newer version or even the further work had been completely voted on and vetted. So that's a problem. But if we are just saying that we use the edge until, and we know that there's work out there, and that it should be replaced when the newer alternatives are ready, then that's fine.
Okay, so we'll make as a part of our phrasing, I made a note, quick note here to, that until that is published, it cannot be retired. Shorthand for the moment that we address that in our phrasing to make sure is that it cannot be interpreted as being removed. And it might be a general comment that none is supposed to be retired until and such a time that a new one is named, where we feel that you can start to move along.
Well, this is Stephen. And the fact of the matter is that it would not be probably likely that a standard would be adopted by rule and regulation and be required in place on the first day a regulation might be in effect. There's usually an implementation period or an adoption period, unless it's more of a retroactive standard or retroactive regulation where everybody's already using a particular standard that's been around for quite some time and it's formalizing practice.
Correct. So we need to be very careful how we phrase it, that we are not giving the impression here that we believe that it can already be replaced in the absence of something new. And if something new is not coming around, then please don't replace it because it's still needed.
And the fact of the matter is there has to be sufficient time after a standard is published and adopted for implementation. Regardless, you can't just say, well, it would be difficult in an environment to say, here's a standard. It's the official standard as of today. You must be in compliance with the existing standard as of today, especially when that standard was just published yesterday.
Right. Yeah, and a lot of that conversation can then also happen once it's being actually proposed. I also see a question from Samantha on whether this is about number 18, and that might go back without an update on 19. And Fazil, I'm curious whether you could clarify that a little bit more, what the dependency is now versus at a future point in time.
The dependency is one way. You can use 18 without using 19, but you cannot use 19 without using 18. So, I mean, that's what it is. So, if at the time of update, the newest version of 18 is adopted, but the newest version of 19 is not adopted, and the previous version is maintained, the previous version will probably work to some extent, but it will be, it does not have the same formal strength and formal requirements that are present in the newer versions. That's all.
So you can use 1.3, version 1.3 without 19, but you cannot use 19 until that's updated to properly work with 1.3 or thereabouts. Correct?
That may be a little bit too strong of a statement because the new version is supposed to be backwards compatible. As far as I know, I don't think they're breaking anything except for properly formalizing things that before were not clearly defined. So there were multiple ways to do things beyond what was intended to be the right way. And the newer version will have the one right way to do it. Validation tools for 19 for the old version, I think will work just fine with the updated version of 19. It's just that they won't be updated to catch these special cases that were not correct before and were allowed. So it's that type of details that are affected. I don't think anything precludes for 18 to be updated if the new versions of 19 are not adopted. It is just that the new versions of 19 will provide for better interoperability, lower lower the implementation costs because they'll remove variations that are invalid.
Perhaps then, as we get to the next round of phrasing this, Vasil, if you can help make sure that we phrase that right, just to get that nuance more clear. But the question says, Samantha, yep, that clarifies your question. Great. Okay, dope. So that means that we have a draft for 18 and 19 on how to progress there, and we have some nuances that we want to make clear about, that we don't reach an incorrect conclusion of standards being removed too soon. That gets us to number 20, unless there's other questions around 19 or 18. Okay, in 20, that is referencing a number of sections of the IHE IT infrastructure, or the ITI technical framework. And there is nothing listed in ASFAB, but when you look at it, is that there is a latest published version of the ITI overall that is as recent as June of 2022, and there are frequent updates to the ITI framework that are being applied all over the framework. But the sections that are actually referenced, and if you, when you go to the standard, you notice that this goes back early 2010, 12 in that range on a version, I think it's number 7. So you could say is that change has occurred. The question is how much change occurred in those sections since that point in time. So that's where the question is coming up here, and you see a number of indications of working on it, trying to understand that, to get more input on that. You also see some need more information, and you see that there is a note that, yes, we should phase out replace. So that sounds like that, from Vasil's perspective, enough newness has happened to consider that. Vasil, as you probably most more up to speed than others, and you have a note in here, you indicate that it should also properly reference volume 1, not just the transactions in volume 2. So there's more to be done. Can you clarify that, whether it's a combination of improved references as well as updates, or is it just improved references that you're looking at?
Oh, hey, definitely.
This is Clems. What is this for, and how much is it used, and how important is it?
It is used, Clem. It is used for all the Care Equality Network uses that.
Uh-huh.
And so you're looking at about tens of millions of patient records being exchanged every month using okay. those.
But, well, goes back a long time, but isn't this something HL7 should be doing?
Well, this is IHE defined the document exchange framework, which is part of the ITI. Not HL7. HL7 defines the content, and IHE is defining profiles on some of that content. But this is about the document exchange and how to interact. So that these are really the fundamentals of how document exchange can occur, is to occur, and is whether it's as part of care quality, HIEs, Commonwealth, whatever. Everybody is using parts of the ITI technical framework to make that happen. And it's explicitly referenced that these sections that are in this, this is really an abbreviated version of the ITI that is explicitly referenced in the technical, in the certification rules that you must adhere to in order to do document exchange and participate in that. So that's what the intent and the focus of that standard is. And that's why it's not HL7 in that regard. They're not operating in that particular space.
Okay, well, thank you.
To answer the question, definitely update, because there's a lot of improvement in the documentation, and the documentation is much clearer than what was in version 7 or whatever in that area. And the reason it only referenced volume two is because it was the start of defining a new profile at that time that was not fully defined for the push transactions. And that is now fully defined, so that the update should be both to the current version and better references, because just pointing to a transaction which can be used by multiple profiles for multiple purposes and for the different purposes have different requirements, it is very important that you frame it within the profile which defines those requirements.
Go ahead, Tafsil.
I can provide concrete examples of what the improvements are and what how the requirements are clarified, but I think you captured what.
Okay. And I think that for the argument that we make why it should not just be maintained, this may be enough, but an example or two might help. But we're not trying to come to a full list necessarily, because as part of the process of the next round of rulemaking, that's where those considerations should be coming into play and say, is that enough to increase it to the next one? But certainly the indication here is that you should really look at that.
Right, and this is even, and not only is it enough, and this is out of scope of this task force, but looking at what are the costs of implementation and is there enough value in looking at changing to a different standard to warrant the adjustment. Again, that's outside the scope of this task force, and that's part of the whole regulation build and looking at justifications that have to be considered by OMB in moving a regulation forward.
Just to be clear, this is not an alternative, right? And current implementations already follow an updated version to what is in version 7. And it's very likely that certification tools have taken into account the newer version clarifications that are not present in the original references.
Yeah, and so you could argue from that perspective, ASVAB probably should have used that because they're not just errata. Not that they're necessarily very substantially in there, but they are consequential. So that would be perhaps ASVAB side. But that will be a separate discussion around that. This seems to be enough to indicate is that maintaining is not sufficient, and that replacement with a more current version and references is appropriate to start to consider. We can provide some examples to fill out that recommendation. Is there anybody that has a concern with starting to flesh that out and move forward with that? If not, then we have come to the end of group two, and we are then starting to look at group five. Is there anything on group two that we may have to go back to, or are we all comfortable that we jump into group five? Okay, this is going to be an interesting variety of a couple of ones, because we're starting to look at different aspects, and we'll so it is going to be an interesting mix of what's there. Hodgepodge came to mind. So let's work through that. The first one is an annex to FIPS that is about security. And we probably have, when we look at this, we have a couple of folks that are indicating in needing more information, some working. The maintain is there a couple of times as well. There is a latest published version, but it does not seem that that current version is anything substantially new to this that would be a material to consider. So at least that's from a backdrop. That's the reason why I put in maintain. Vasil indicated maintain, but wants to get a little bit more. What information after people looked at this? What other information do we need on this standard before we can go and figure out a potential recommendation? Do we need additional information around this?
I would say,
is this used in healthcare heavily?
Yes, we have to fully adhere to this in order to have proper security in place in a number of areas.
This is mostly security?
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't see that there is a new version. I would suggest that we need to update to the newest version given the essence of security. And in terms of additional information, it will be helpful if we can get some federal feedback on this, on whether the newest version would cause any issues being implemented. I don't expect a FIPS specification, a published FIPS specification to be too new to implement by most vendors. So I'll suggest that we use our usual language of the latest version of the time of publication.
And this is even if there's no content change specific to the subject at hand, you know, if the document is making changes in other domains, it's still probably advantageous to modernize the standard so there's consistency on the organization's part, that they're not playing by a different set of standards for their health information system as opposed to some other system within the organization, if there's no cost to saying, yep, this is the current version that incorporates the same language as the old standard, if that makes sense.
I'm in agreement with these comments supporting the update to the new standard, although I do think it would be helpful to get some sense of how much it is going to cost, how big of a burden is it to ask people to migrate. Generally in security, I always think, given the state of the security environment and constantly evolving threats, that we should always be pushing towards, you know, the most recent versions, mindful, of course, of what the different costs might be of that upgrade and needing to migrate to it over time.
I'm also thinking about regulatory impacts outside of ONC's specific components, looking at federal audits or things like that that may affect an organization where an audit finding is, oh, you're not compliant with the FIPS standard on A, but you are compliant with B, and having an internal disconnect with auditors because there are two conflicting standards required.
Well, although if you are required by through some other mechanism to adhere to the latest federal standard, there's nothing that stops you from migrating there. Whether this is sort of required as an ONC standard or not. I mean, and we have had that discussion about being able to adopt more robust standards. But I just think for security, again, I'm in agreement with those that think migrating to the next version makes sense, unless, of course, it's going to be significantly costly and we need to put it on a slower time frame. And getting more information on that would be helpful.
And it's also an interesting note is that when you go to that place, that standard, it's always, that link is always reflecting the most current version. You don't get to the 2014 version from that. You only get to the latest. But so it sounds like there is gravitating towards use the same language, use the most current, whichever one that is, reference that, and then move forward from that.
And administratively, how do I think we need to go pick up line, whatever is the 39, the time standard?
Yep.
People skipped it.
Liz just sent me a note as well, slapping my hand on that. We'll go back to it in a second. So any other things on 38? We're good with that direction? Okay, then we do need to go back to 37 since I accidentally skipped one extra line.
No, time got away from you.
All right, let's see, RFC 5905. I did not work according to the network time protocol apparently. So we fix that, back on the right spot. There is no known current standards out there. Could not find the latest published yet unless somebody found it. The comments are mostly around maintain and a couple of information needed. This maintains the proper syncing of network time as needed for document exchange, others, but particularly that one. Any concerns that we keep this as a maintain because we just don't know about anything new. And we don't expect that because of the nature of this type of standard.
I think we know maintain unless there's something new that we missed. And virtually include something similar to that in the language of the recommendation.
So the clarifying note, we are not aware of any new ones, but if something comes around that needs to be evaluated.
There might be there three other RFCs that update that one. And one of them is for message authentication.
Which ones are they? That update RFC 5905?
Yeah.
Well, then we need to check that out. Do you happen to have the actual?
So one is 8573. That is what got my and 9109.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the Wikipedia page on this, and it says RFC 7822.
Well. And 7822 is for extensions, and I don't think that any extensions are necessary. Again, so out of the three, 7822, 8573, and 9109, 8573 is to get rid of MD5 checksums, I believe. And 9109 introduces port randomization, which I don't know if it's relevant. So out of the three, maybe 8573 is relevant, but I'm not certain.
So maybe then a follow-up here is that we check that out respectively. And if your sense is that the extensions in 7822 are not applicable to what we're doing, we'd check that out then as well.
Right.
I think it's safe to say that there's consensus that understanding time between systems is an important consideration and that there does need to be a standardized approach, whatever it may be.
Okay. So we'll keep this on as a follow-up. I'm going to mark that, put that in a yellow color here so that we'll catch that for sure to come back to. Cool. Any other comments here? Next one is the ASTM standard for audit. We have a couple of different comments here. Working, maintain, inclusive, need more information. There is a 2019 update that is accessible if you pay a fee. So some have not been able yet to check that out and see, is there anything in here that is substantially new, but there is an update out there. Even though and it's on the page that when you click on this, that there's an updated, last updated, et cetera. But the name of the standards and otherwise it looks all the same. So this might be in the same category that we need to check that a little bit more unless somebody already had the chance and can provide some insight as to what happened between this version and 2019.
And we know that the standard is about 7 pages long.
Yeah, there's a, and there are some critical components in that. We're still working on it. Still checking it out, getting our hands on the version. So I'd suggest that we put this one on the side for a moment to check that out as well.
Hey Hans, your comment about there being a cost to accessing the standard reminded me that Samantha has a comment in the chat regarding whether cost of updates is something that we consider or whether it goes into regulation. And since I raised it with the last one, it would be good to get a clarification of whether that's in scope.
For us, it's not in scope. It would be considerations that to actually into the next rulemaking, whether it's or what the cost benefits are. But here, since the primary focus is on what can be retired or replaced, it would fall in the category if we should consider that. And therefore, there might be good reason to replace it rather than maintaining as is or fully retiring. That's what we currently understand the charter of the question is. And then we can go as far as some examples as to why, but not necessarily go into a full analysis as to whether the cost benefit, the functions, et cetera, whether they are sufficient to make that happen.
Got it. Thank you.
And looking at Seth, just to another on the ONC team to make sure we stay on track there, because that don't want to stray too far. Okay, nope. And the cost, by the way, is $54 for the standards. So that's definitely less than whatever substantive changes it might have that we would have to develop against. It's just 15 minutes to open it up.
Yeah, and just to reemphasize, Samantha, that looking at considering benefits and cost of implementing standards is well outside scope of task force, that it would take probably a very lengthy amount of time to look at a true benefit cost analysis for any one of the standards we've discussed to this point, let alone all of the standards discussed across the entire health provider, health systems domain. And that's beyond our scope.
Okay. There was a question that came up in prepping for this as well. Since there is a cost with getting to the standard to review whether it is actually substantive or not, otherwise, most other, if not all, are free. Question for ONC, is there a method by which this task force could get access its members to a version that it could help assess what recommendation to make? Or are we then obligated to obtain that standard at the ASDM cost? Seth or somebody else, do you have a recommendation, or do we need to you need to follow up on that?
Yeah, this is Seth. I guess I'm not sure I understood the question. Could you say it again?
Sure. The nature of the question, Seth, is that this particular standard has a cost per acquisition of $54 a copy, and it is difficult for the task force to evaluate whether the standard should be maintained or retired without understanding what the language of the standard actually is. So is there a method that we can get access to the language of the standard to evaluate and make a recommendation to ONC whether it should be maintained or retired?
Okay, thanks for clarifying. Yeah, we'll follow up.
Basically, we can see the book and its cover, but we can't see the contents.
Right.
Got it. Okay, yeah, we'll follow up.
Okay, so we'll check on that. That gets us then to number 14, OpenID Connect Core 1.0. And with the errata from set one, there is nothing published in ASVAB. There is no known latest published for this one. This is currently what it looks like. We are not aware of more current versions, but I think Raju is Raj on the line? Thought I did not hear him during the intro. Nope. He indicated a suggestion for either perhaps phase out or replace update, and we have a couple of other ones that are maintained or inconclusive. Is anybody else aware of any new version? We are not. We're not aware of any work going on that would indicate something relatively imminent. Any thoughts from anybody with additional insights? And we may want to reach out to Raj to understand what's the reason for it potentially phasing out. No need for it at all. Not sure whether that was his intended suggestion or whether there is an update there that may be aware of. If not, then perhaps we should, if that's okay, I'm marking this one actually, forgot that, yellow, for a follow-up. Is there any concern if we mark OpenID as a follower as well, just to make sure whether Raj has some insight that we should consider? Okay, I don't hear a concern there. Then we are going to go on to a secure hash. Goes back to 2015, used also from a security perspective. No known updates, nothing mentioned in SFAP. We see a couple of maintains, a couple of working. Does anybody have any additional information or that we need before making a recommendation to maintain?
This is Steve. I think having additional information probably would be good. Again, looking at the date 2015 and thinking about it from a security perspective, that feels like almost ancient history. And I'm kind of wondering if ONC might be able to help us identify a subject matter expert or two to either present some information on it or make a recommendation about a potential alternative or other things that are in development as potential substitutes.
And I'm also curious, adding to ONC, not to put Ram on the spot, but NIST may have some insights on some of the developments in security on how to further improve upon that. So I'm wondering whether, Ram, we can ask you as well to see whether there's more insight there.
Yeah, there are some, the security division is working on a number of documents, so I can check that out.
That would be great.
In terms of what's the relevance, many of those documents are being adopted everywhere. So, I mean, these are all generic stuff. So,
yeah, there's
you can apply to any domain, not only healthcare.
Right.
Yeah, there's not an absolute requirement. I'm just looking at the date of 2015 and all the work going on in security on a daily basis and thinking there's probably something at least in development, if not being released, and it would be something good to keep. If there's not something available today, to keep our eyes on that ball.
Yeah, I will send you a check and send an email tomorrow.
Great. That would be great. Yeah, I suspect that it's going to be more of another approach versus that there's a version update, because there's so many ways that you can generate a hash.
Yeah.
The specification is specifically for. The specification is specifically for SHA hashes.
SHA. Uh-huh.
And the only thing that might have been updated is the removal from SHA-1 as a secure hash. So there might be a relevant update somewhere.
And Ram, I'm also wondering, and I can reach out to Marion Jaeger in the Sequoia project to think if there's some kind of hash conversation going on with respect to TEFCA. Would be another place where I could see discussions around security and encryption going on today in the world of information exchange. So there might be a linkage there.
Okay, so but I'll check with my security division on this and let you know tomorrow.
Yeah, not that Sequoia is developing a standard, but they may have had discussions with maybe something going in IHE or somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have not heard anything yet, but let's find Okay. So we'll come back to that one as well. Let's see, on to the next. Web content accessibility. Currently in the rules, it is in the rules it is 2.0. In ASVAB, it has been recognized through 2.1. And that's actually, when we look at the two rows, they're going to be very similar in that regard. There are some comments that are indicating replace out of date, and that sounds like in the direction of the then most current. We already went up to 2.1, so at least that seems a reasonable one in the next regulation to go to. There's nothing further published at this point in time, but these two seem to be, and starting with this one, to be at the same type of recommendation of then most current, since we already have something in ASVAB, and there might be more advances that that come our way. Does that sound like that would be the appropriate direction for our drafting? Is there additional information needed? Sounds like that. Then most current.
Actually, let me ask the question of our ONC colleagues. Is it worth the question to the Office of Civil Rights at HHS for any guidance in that space so there's consistency within HHS on accessibility requirements?
Yeah, certainly we can reach out to our OCR colleagues on that one. It's Seth.
Thank you.
Okay, and is it reasonable to say that that's a same response to the recommendation direction for the next one, 43, the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines Level AA conformance. There are in the guides different levels. Are we looking at that same fashion? Any reason to be different?
Yeah, and Hans, I think the note from OCR is looking not just other developments, but consistency with other OCR related activities.
Okay, I'll add that. Thank you.
So that they've got, so that if there's an opportunity for internal consistency with OCR, that would be, might be a helpful thing for them.
Okay, I'll add that to the other one as well. And then we'll next meeting, we'll have further insights on that. Okay. Any other comments on either 42 or 43? If not, then last one in the group, USCDI. USCDI was named. I'm not sure whether it actually had a version number in it at that point, but certainly there's a version 2 that has been published in ASVAB. We know that imminently, weeks, days, I'm not sure, but very shortly, USCDI version 3 is expected to come out, and that progression will continue to move on. Feedback that is indicating a variety of maintain that would indicate don't change USCDI version 1, or at least that's how it could be interpreted. I'm not sure whether it was intended. Other feedback is to say go to the then most current, and another comment on need more information. So let's start with need more information. What should we find out more about before we can make a recommendation? And Fasil, you made that one, but there might be others as well along those lines. And you made a comment in here. Around what are the implications for US Core and CCDA companion guide? Vasil, do you want to clarify?
I believe the current, the latest version of the CCDA companion guide was released specifically to address US CDI requirements. And US core releases also are out for, are updated based on new US CDI requirements. I believe US Core 5 was published to address US CDI version 2.
Correct.
And so if we specify here that it's the latest, what is the impact on those downstream standards that are necessary to actually exchange the data that is in US CDI?
And that's a great point, because that there is about almost a year gap that Cadence currently has. I was talking with Brett McCarr yesterday to get on some topics, and went through the timeline. And there's clearly, if in year one or year N, there is US CDI version N that comes out, that then there will be a catch-up by CCDA and FHIR US Core specifically to address the increment. And then that means is that in year N plus one, target somewhere in spring, is that that would be available. What we currently saw is that in July-ish last year, US CDI version 2 was published. In January, the US Core and CCDA guides that were needed to support that were balloted. Ballot reconciliation occurred, and actually after ASFAP review closed, April 15th, if I have the correct date there, or it was May 15th, but after that day, then US Core and CCDA were published, and then ASFAP was published after that. So that was the sequence, and it's starting to look like that's probably the cadence that we're on. So indeed, we would have to be very careful, not just saying most current version, but then most current version that has, or at least that we would have to say that has US Core and CCDA support for it.
Well, I think you're going to get into a catch 22. You know, if we don't do this one because the other ones haven't done it, then they're going to say, hey, well, you know, it's going to, I think we should support it and then encourage the inclusion in the CDA and the other parts, because that's how it was defined to be used.
Well, that is a challenge, but Hung, you have a question, comment, you have your hand up.
Well, I think I'm in agreement that we should go with the most updated version. And I think that there is a surrounding process for doing that. So I think we are probably overthinking it in terms of if we make a recommendation on a specific version that we're going to get ahead of the process. I think that hopefully there is a well thought out process about how to onboard and implement a new version after it's been published. I mean, I think that we've heard from those for ONC before that they've given a lot of thought to not only to signal to the vendors that this is the direction that they're going, but also to give them adequate time to adapt. And so I would just stick with the recommendation that we go with the most updated version that is ready, and let the process work itself out, rather than try and time it so that our recommendation fits with the process.
I see Jeff has his hand up.
Just to be contrary, I think I agree with you. We're in a situation where the US CDI is the definitions, but the way we actually implement it is going to be US Core and CCDA. And those are, at least the way Brett has explained it to me, it sounds like we're going to be about 6 months to a year behind US CDI in all those cases. So we probably need to support everything we're working on, like right now from SVAP for the current version of US Core is going to be supporting US CDI V2. And if we go ahead and say, now we're going to immediately move to V3, the V3 version of US Core isn't going to be ready until January, February of next year.
That's actually April, May next year.
Okay. Thank you.
Just to interject quickly, and we do need to be aware of public comment times. We may take a position where we kind of hybridize the approach, recognize the need to adopt one standard, but have the other standard. I'm sorry to say it, but on deck for looking at building the next iteration.
And perhaps looking at the time, in about a minute, we need to go to public comment. So maybe, Fasil, you have the last comment, then we go to public comment. Depending on how much this, we're going to come back with Clem, Jeff, and I'm raising my hand as well. So, Vasil, do you have a comment before the public comments?
Yeah, very quick. My suggestion would be to specify, instead of the most current published version for US CDI, the most current published version that is supported by a published US Core and CCDA companion guides. That way we don't get out of sync and everything is up to date.
Okay, well, we'll stop there for the moment and then pass it back to Seth to get us into public comment and go from there. And then we'll come back if we have more time left.
All right, thank you. So we're gonna open the call up now for any public comments. If you are on the Zoom and you wanna make a public comment, please use the hand raise function. It's located on the Zoom tool bar at the bottom of your screen. If you are just on the phone, audio only, press *9 to raise your hand. And once called upon, press *6 to mute and unmute your line. And we will open it up for public comments. Looks like we have one comment, John Travis. You go ahead, remember just push *6 to mute or unmute your line.
John, if you can unmute. I know you put a it's only online.
Oh.
You put this note.
Okay.
That's a note in the
John, if you want to type your question, one of us can read it aloud so that people can see it in the chat, but we can also read it aloud for people that would prefer to hear it.
And there's a new message coming in, will do.
Okay, while we wait for John's comment, do we have any comments on just on the audio line? Okay, I think we just have then the one public comment from John, so why don't we give him a second to type in his comment.
And otherwise, if it's from out there.
So the question or comment from John Travis, my question is, how does this process consider a current version of standard and current certification regulation as the questions of retirement? USCDI version 1, a good example.
So generally in this process, the way we would understand that is that the current rule has USCDI version 1 in play. And there is a current version and there will be a more current version shortly. So the recommendation that we could make is either to maintain it as is, there is no need to go up in the regulation to a more current version. We would have to give some rationale as to why. Or we could say with to a more current version and indicate which one that might be or more open, keeping in mind that it's not the charter of the task force to fully define the recommendation. It must be a particular version for these 10 reasons. because at that point in time, when that new regulation would start to be created, there is going to be opportunity for review, and whether that's the right version, earlier one, a later one, whatever it might be. So that is make those more detailed comments and specific comments. Rather here, it is that we're looking at a argument that is sufficient to highlight why it need not be maintained in its current form. And I think that's where we're looking at right now, is that how we want to phrase the looking at a more current version. I'm getting the sense is that we should move to something more current. The question how is how do we phrase that more current, given that there is a dependency of being able to implement US CDI in order to have appropriate standards that could do that. And for some programs that might be critical, and for other programs that might not be relevant. And so I think that's the reason why we have this. But if we're looking at the reference to US CDI, it is referenced in regulations for certification, and it's referenced in regulation for information blocking until end of October. And the other question, Seth, that I just see from John Travis pop up with that, whether the reference to one version maintained and one version recommended. On that line, the way, and Seth, you might have more insight in that, but again, this is not that we're trying to be very specific about it, but if we feel that there should be consideration of supporting more versions of that, I think we could hint at that, but it's not necessarily that we are the ones that are making a firm recommendation on behalf of HITECH for that. That will be a future process. Is that, Seth, a proper representation there?
Yeah, I think that's correct. And I would say there's the opportunity and the kind of rationale and explanation section if there is additional context that wanted to provide us background for a recommendation, that would be the place to do that as well.
And Seth, this is Steve Edner. Is it also fair to say that there is, until such time as a regulation is changed potentially to reference a different standard, the current standard and referenced in current regulation still applies?
Yeah, there's nothing binding coming from the HITECH recommendation. So any change as a result, or that would be informed by the recommendations of the task force and ultimately the HITECH, any changes to the requirements would have come through subsequent rulemaking from ONC.
Right.
And go through the regular rulemaking process with a comment period, et cetera, and ONC or CMS processing comments, and then having an effective rule at some point down the line.
Right. Correct. Yeah. Any changes would go through the full rulemaking process.
Wonderful. Thank you for the clarification.
Seth, are there any other public comments that we need to address before we, in the last couple of minutes, go back to our raised hands?
No, that's it for the public comments. We can go back to the panel discussion for the last few minutes.
And okay. Hans, I'm going to divert us just for about 2 seconds before we go back to discussion and do a quick, not close out, but is my understanding you're not going to be able to join us for next week's meeting, but we will be talking about public health related standards. Is that correct?
That's the current plan, correct.
Okay, so just wanted people to be aware of that before they might have stepped off at end of time, but let's go back to our earlier discussion.
Clem, you're in line next. Go ahead. And you're in mute still. Clem, you're on mute.
I want to support Dr. Liu's position vigorously. We've been working on this for the last 4 to 6 months, and why would we not support it? I mean, of course, it's got to work through to fit other things, but if you keep waiting for the one to be succeed, I mean, what to say, when that's not done, then this is not done, we'll be in a catch-22. We should just support it and assume it'll work its way through.
Okay. Let's then go to the next comment, which is going to be somewhat different in that more aligned with Fasil's comment, that And what we have seen in ASVAB is that ASVAB was not including USCDI version 2 until the FHIR US Core and USCDI or CDA standards were included and could be included as well. Otherwise, from a certification perspective, where these standards are being referenced, could not be executed on because you don't know what you have to adhere to. So I think it is in this particular situation, a little bit of a catch-22 that, yes, we need to go to the most current one, but if that current one at the time that the proposed rule is being written does not have and would not have in a reasonable time the right standards to actually implement it, then at that point in time, it's not workable. So there's a difference between intent and desire versus what is practical and can actually work in a certification environment where you have to test against the standard specifically, not necessarily UCDI, although there are some aspects to it, but you need to have the standard that implements that. That's why this is that's in this case what happens. So I would be very supportive of the other note to have that cautionary remark there to be careful. Don't put something in that you cannot work with. It's not that we don't want it there. It's that we would like to have a UCDI well beyond what it's currently defined over time. But that's not the practical implementation of it. We are within a minute. See whether we can still get Phil in. And then we know that we have to pick this up in the next session to come to a conclusion. We won't get there yet today. But Phil, if you have still an opportunity, and we'll get this back on the agenda next time.
Yep. Thanks, Hans. And hopefully this will be fast. I just had a loop around on lines 42 and 43 and a question on our process. So it appears there is a WCAG 2.2 in draft form. And I'm wondering if we want to make note of that we are aware of that draft form for the next iteration of this committee that comes behind us.
Okay, no, I'll and that depending on the rulemaking, that might then be the then most current. So I'm making that note in the notes that we have that as well and that we have that awareness. Thank you. I think that brings us to the top of the hour. Steve, anything from your perspective that we need to wrap up with before we close the meeting and reconvene next week? And Hong, then we'll pick up with your comments on USCDI.
I think that's a pretty good place to stop because we do need to have continued discussion about that, about the approach and looking at interdependencies, but there is no more time this week. So we will pick it up next week along with information about public health related standards. And I want to thank all the task force members for their participation today and their valuable insights. Please do continue to look at the worksheets and provide updates. And if there are any questions, please reach out to ONC and we will address questions during the week via email.
All right, thank you very much. And we'll be back next week.
All right, thanks everyone.
Thank you.
This is just bring the meeting to a closure. Thanks everyone.